shotglassdigital.com.
From magical movies.
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot.
To unforgettable adventures.
Well, once there was a princess.
I'm an outlaw, that's what.
That's no life for a lovely lady always on the run.
From the thrill of the theater to the comfort of your home.
Do you want to build a snowman? Or ride our bike around the lawn?
I don't care how you kill the little beast, but do it! And do it now!
You can always count on something new from Disney.
That's why they call me Thumper.
The simple bare necessities.
Forget about your worries and your stress.
Look, have I got it? The magic feather. Now you can fly.
Ohana means family.
Just a sec. Buzz, will you get up here and give me a hand?
That's very funny.
I'm taking you to someplace pretty special.
Flower, clean and warm. Let the powder show.
You won't find him here. The king has returned.
Join us for discussion and commentary as we open the Disney Vault with your hosts, Steve Glosson and Teresa Delgado.
Hello and welcome to Disney Vault Talk, the most magical podcast on the internet. It really is just full of magic and pixie dust and wonder, all sorts of great things. My name's Steve Glosson. So glad to be along with you for this edition of Disney Vault Talk as we continue our journey through the animated films of Walt Disney Studios one at a time. On this episode, 1990s, The Rescuers Down Under. And no episode of Disney Vault Talk is complete without, of course, the heart and soul of Disney Vault Talk. She is the lovely, the talented, the powerful, Teresa Delgado. Hello, Teresa.
Hello, Steve. I don't know why it's coming out like that. Hello.
Hello. How are you? Okay over there? Your microphone
how
seems...
How it's going? Sorry, I was moving my microphone cord.
It seems to be in some sort of a earthquake or something.
Mm-hmm.
An earthquake, I should say. Get my articles right. How's it going? How it's going?
How it's going? Hey. It's going good.
Hey, guys.
I've been a little bit sick.
Oh, yeah. Under the weather.
Anymore.
Good.
Really tired.
Yeah, aren't we all, my friend? Aren't we all?
Yeah.
And this is your second podcast that you're recording on the day of recording.
It is. I did Star Wars Bookworms earlier. We broke down Dark Disciple, and you might actually hear me cry a little bit on a books podcast.
Oh, snap.
Oh, my God.
I need to pick up Dark Disciple then.
Yeah.
Get that thing and then listen to you guys on Star Wars Bookworms and find out what you're crying about. So, Teresa, before we get too deep into things, we missed podcast day, so happy belated podcast day.
Happy podcast day to you, my friend.
I don't know what that means. I just know that apparently yesterday it was a thing, apparently.
It was. I almost felt like, you know, we needed to say something, so I shouted out to a bunch of other Disney podcasts from us.
Oh, nice.
Saying,
nice.
Happy podcast day, other Disney podcasters.
See, I should, my thought process immediately went to all of the co-hosts from the Golaverse, like you and Dave Jones and Kristen from Jersey and Erish and Derek and all these people, and I'm like, okay, you know what? This is getting crazy. So I guess it's one of those days, like Siblings Day or some such. There's a day for something every day of the year.
Really is. I want to know what day is Banana Day.
I guarantee you there's a National Banana Day. I'm about to, you know what? And I don't have it pulled up, but I'm about to Google that for you. Cool. Let me Google that for you. April 15th, Banana Day.
April 15th is Banana Day?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there a toy day?
Oh, I'm sure there has to be. Let's see. Well, wait a second. Maybe not. Maybe this is something we can start. Celebrate National Toy Day. That appears to be November 14th.
Hey, that's coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
National Toy Day.
Happy National Toy Day, everybody.
We need to mark our calendars for that.
Yeah, and I can just play in the Star Wars room all day long.
Wasn't National Talk Like a Pirate Day not that long ago?
Yeah, it's in September. It always happens in September. And I always mark that as a Big Honkin' Show anniversary because the first wave of the Big Honkin' Show way, way back, we used to do it on Saturday mornings, like the second episode took place on National Talk Like a Pirate Day. And when I came back to the radio, it wasn't long after National Talk Like a Pirate Day. And so that day always has a special place in my heart.
Well, you know what today is?
Disney Vault Talk Day?
No.
Okay.
Well, it is, but no.
Okay.
It is the 44th anniversary of Magic Kingdom's opening day.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I know that is because it is also the 4th anniversary of the day that I got engaged. We got engaged 4 years ago today on the same day as Magic Kingdom's opening day.
Well, happy engagement-versary.
Thank you.
Wow. And I know you guys have had a special time last night.
We did. So we went on date night.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
Isn't it?
I was... Me, Arish, and
we went to the Melting Pot, Steve.
What is? I don't know what that is.
It's a fondue restaurant.
Oh,
you get fondue cheese, and you get a salad, and then you get a big like entree of fondue stuff. I had shrimp and salmon and spinach and artichoke ravioli. Yummy.
Oh, so
Greg had all kinds of beef.
So you guys fondue?
We fondue for two.
Captain America.
And then you have chocolate fondue later. We did the flaming turtle.
That sounds horrible.
Do you know what a turtle is?
Yes, it's a cute like a little animal with a shell.
No, a chocolate turtle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like that, but melted.
Oh.
Then I stuck strawberries and marshmallows and like Oreo-covered marshmallows in.
Well, this, you know what this sounds like? This sounds like just a dream. Mm-hmm. You're dipping stuff in melted cheese and chocolate and everything. Shoot. Yeah, I know what fondue is. I was going back to Captain America when Howard Stark asked Peggy Carter to go for some fondue. And then later on, she's mad at him because that woman like attacks him in the office. And he's like, "What is your problem? I thought you and Stark fondued. You know, don't you guys fondue?" And she's like, and she has to explain to him what fondue is.
That's weird. Hey, you know what is coming up this weekend?
I really don't.
It is the second wave release of Hallmark ornaments, which means the Kylo Ren ornament is coming out on Saturday.
You got to be kidding me.
Uh-uh.
Well, I'm sitting here right now with a fun little find that I found the other day. I know these have been out for a bit and other people have found them, but... I found the Force Awakens coloring and activity book, Crush the Resistance, complete with a Kylo Ren cover with some First Order Stormtroopers on it, and all kinds of fun pages to color and activities to do.
That's awesome. But yeah. You know, and I'm really excited because we get to dress up in costumes for ornament debut.
Oh, yeah?
Which is what this is called. I'm going to be Snoopy.
Nice. Are they doing a Snoopy ornament?
Yeah, I always do Snoopy ornaments. Okay. They do like five.
Well, because, you know, the Peanuts are coming back big time this year.
It is. Well, yeah, the movie's coming out. So excited. But it is also the 60th anniversary of Peanuts this year.
Oh, wow. Didn't realize that.
So that's probably why the movie's coming out. But it's just like, I was like, I have to do Snoopy. And I'm so excited. I cannot wait. My mom made my hoodie. I have a white hoodie that my mom sewed a black spot on the back, and she made ears. Nice. And they're sewn onto the hood part. And then I have white sweatpants.
Oh, fun. Well, so, you know, You know, I dressed up as Snoopy for Halloween one year. Long time ago. Yeah. That's a property that I'm surprised that Disney never snatched up.
I know. I don't even know who owns Peanuts.
I think the Charles Schulz estate still does.
Well, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Because they're great. Freaking love Peanuts. Oh my gosh, Snoopy's got a new girlfriend. It's a poodle.
Oh, Lord.
So excited.
All right. Well, there we go.
I am.
I have something that I did this past week that all at once confounds me and scares the bejesus out of me. I signed up for the Star Wars 5K down at Disney World in April.
You did?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm so happy for you. That's so cool.
So I'll be reporting on that from a hospital bed somewhere once it's all said and done.
Are you going to run it?
Yeah, I've started training. You know, they do that couch to 5K thing that's out there. It's an app. There's an app with it that you can get. And basically it has like a series of, I don't know how many weeks it is supposed to be, but like by the end of this thing, you're supposed to be able to run a 5K. And the way it works is like the very first day, very first workout is you walk 5 minutes, then you kind of jog a minute, then you walk a minute and a half, then you jog a minute, and you alternate back and forth. I jogged the other day when I first started. I started on Monday, kind of really, you know, getting serious about stuff. And I probably ran, and I'm using my quote fingers there, for about 60 seconds of that entire workout. Yesterday, on my second workout with it, redoing that first day, I probably ran 90 seconds. So, improvement.
Yay, improvement. Woohoo!
But yeah, so I've got to trim my mile down a little bit to make sure I'm in the allotted time. So, but I've got till April, so started working hard to that end. Just because I want to, you know... Josh Lucht, who I met down 2 years ago at Star Wars Weekends, last year when we were all there together, he shot me a message and said, hey, you should do this. And I'm like, no! And then I got thinking, you know what, it's Star Wars. It's something that could be fun and interesting for the podcast, so why not? Let's do this. And, of course, while I'm down there, I'll probably hit up, you know, my favorite places, Hollywood Studios, Star Tours, that sort of thing. So,
well, I'm excited for you.
Well, you know, just keep me in your thoughts and prayers, because I hate running. I think running is just the dumbest thing anyone can do.
I love running.
Yeah.
like
Phoebe on Friends.
Not, I don't run like that though.
I can see it.
I'm gonna run free like a bird with my arms in the air all over the place.
I can see it though.
Well, yeah, true.
That's in my mind, Teresa. That's how you run.
So I have some cool stuff coming up.
Oh yeah,
I am going to Dallas Comic Con Fan Days.
Nice.
You remember Fan Days?
Yes, of course.
But I'm going to work with Steve Bloom. I will be there as his assistant for 3 days, working his table with him. While he signs autographs and does celebrity stuff.
Yeah.
And just hanging out with my friend, and I'm excited.
Well, so, you know what? Yeah. You should try to lock him down for the big Gulliverse marathon that's coming up in January.
I should try to do that, huh?
Yeah, we're doing another marathon, Gulliverse marathon, for Cure Childhood Cancer. In January, it's January 23rd, Saturday, January 23rd. We'll be doing all the shows in the Gulliverse. Last year, we raised over $1,500 for Cure. And this year, the goal is to double that. I thought about just bumping up to $2,000. I said, you know what? Let's just go for the double. And so our goal this year is $3,000. And so we're announcing it now. We're trying to line up a lot of different special things for that day with all the various podcasts. It's going to be a great day happening at Mixlr Live. And then, of course, the podcast will be released throughout the following week. And just looking forward to a good time with that. So, you know, Disney Vault Talk will be there.
Disney Vault, yes, we will.
We love the marathons around here when we do.
We do love marathons. I love Disney Vault Talk marathon shows. I'm going to come up with a great idea that you will not want to miss.
Okay. And you could hear Teresa as that sentence got to the end. She's like, oh, man, I just put a lot of pressure on myself for an idea there.
No, I got real excited.
Well, you ready? Go
ahead. Oh, I'm doing something else, too.
Okay.
I am going to Disneyland in November.
Nice.
And coincidentally didn't plan this. Seasons of the Force is starting at Disneyland while I'm there.
Nice.
So I'm going to get to hang out with Sarah and Richard from Skywalking Through Neverland. It's going to be the three of us, and we're going to go and attack Seasons of the Force. We're going to get to see Hyperspace Mountain, the new Force Awakens sequences on Star Tours, fun snacks that are Star Wars themed, merchandise, launch bay, and whatever they have in there. I'm pumped. Yes. I was like, what?
Nice. That's going to be awesome. Find out about that Ewok situation for me while you're out there.
I will do that. I'm
very confused about this Ewok situation. I've got three, and I feel like I should have five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so discover that for me. That's great. Well, I expect a full report from that.
Oh, there will be. There will be Disney Vault Talk periscoping. There will be Disney Vault Talk live tweeting. I actually get to do an event for Disney Vault Talk.
It's going to be great. I'm looking forward cool. to it. Looking forward to following you on the Disney Vault Talk Twitter, which is at Disney Vault Talk, and of course, at Ice Cold Penguin there on the mm-hmm. Twitter.
I'll be doing both, for sure, for sure.
So, all right, well, are you ready to jump into some emails?
Emails!
When you mail a letter, you can send it anywhere. On foot, by truck, by aeroplane, the postman gets it there. So write a letter to a friend, maybe she'll write you. No matter what, you always know the mail must go through.
We need those letters.
From General Lee, dear son, we're waiting for the Huns at the pass. It would mean a lot if you'd come and back us up.
Oh, can you read this? There's no pictures.
Then I'll put that flea in a box, and then I'll put that box inside of another box, and then I'll mail that box to myself. And when it arrives, I'll smash it with a hammer.
All right. Teresa, you want to start with this first one from Anthony, also known as the Blessed Cheesemaker?
No, you can.
Okay. He says, "Dearest Teresa and Steve, I'm finally sending this in to you as I listen. This is about the Great Mouse Detective, ladies and gentlemen. This is how backed up we are in the old mailbag. I think I first remember listening to this film via a children's book. I especially remember the mice riding around on Toby the dog. The bat still scares me a little when he first attacks Elizabeth." Okay.
Sorry, you know what's so funny?
What's that?
It's because his last name is Rice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We have grains of rice riding around on a dog. The bat still scares me a little bit when he first attacks Olivia and her father, and when he kidnaps Olivia from the toy store. One of the reasons I really like this film is it has one of my favorite voice actors, Alan Young, as Mr. Flaversham. He played Jack Allen on Adventures in Odyssey, a radio show that was my first fandom. Are you familiar with the Adventures in Odyssey?
No.
This was a radio show that played on Saturday mornings on a lot of Christian radio stations. And really, really big in churches and such as. I didn't realize that it was originally based on a book until a few years ago when I came across the book at the library and read it. Even then, I didn't put it together right away because the story of the book is very different from the plot of the movie. Well, there are a few of my random thoughts on the movie. I really want to rewatch Oliver and Company now after your most recent podcast. I may be sending in another email once I do that. Talk to you later. And that's the Blessed Cheesemaker himself, Anthony.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. I'm trying to remember what we decided.
Jason.
Got it. Okay. This is from Jason. He says, "Well, you finally hit the first Disney movies I remember seeing in the theater. My mother swears I saw Bambi in the theater during a re-release, but I don't remember the experience. Neither of these movies are my favorite in the canon. Sorry for using that word, Teresa, but they're serviceable enough. I own both on Blu-ray when they came out. I was hoping the memories I had would be different now that I'm older. Sad to say, they weren't. There's simply nothing really memorable about either film."
Now,
he's talking about The Great Mouse Detective and Oliver and Company. So.
Yes.
Let's see. "The music isn't catchy. The stories are pedestrian. The characters don't make a lasting impression."
Wait a second. I want to say music isn't catchy. No. Why Should I Worry is catchy.
Very.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as catchy as a song that I sung last night and then woke up still singing.
It's
called The Pirates Who Don't Do Anything.
Oh, VeggieTales.
Yeah. Greg had never heard VeggieTales before, so I started playing him all of Larry's silly songs.
Yeah.
And I went to bed singing Pirates Who Don't Do Anything, and then I woke up, and I literally started going, well, I've never sniffed a stink bug, and I'm not too good at ping pong. I've never painted daisies on a big red rubber ball. And I never bathed in yogurt, and I don't look good in leggings.
And she's never been to Boston in the fall. Well.
Anyway. Okay. Ironically, I saw both movies on dreary days. The Great Mouse Detective at the beach during a bad storm, and Oliver and Company on a cold November day in Houston. I then had the Oliver and Dodger Christmas ornaments. They played music, I think. The 43% for Oliver is low, I'll agree, and 81% for the Great Mouse Detective is high. Then again, I like Atlantis, and that movie has a woeful 49% on Rotten Tomatoes. Will you guys ever talk about the Disney Legacy Collection CDs?
What are those?
They're fine soundtracks from some films, and the last one was just released.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you. P.S. I'm going to Disneyland in October for the first time with my boyfriend. We're super excited about it, and we're going to try to get through the entire animated canon of films before then. Well, it is October as of today. I don't know when you're going, but I hope you're close to being done.
Now, Teresa, are you anti the term canon? These things?
No, I think one time on the show we were talking about canon and you were like, I don't like the word canon for these movies. Oh, I don't know. Okay. It's come up where we've said that we didn't like the word, I guess.
Yeah, I think because that has a connotation of a continuity to it to me. I don't know. I want to know more about these Disney Legacy Collection CDs.
Me too.
So let me Google that for you.
Yeah. We are the pirates. We don't do anything. We just stay at home and lie around. When okay. You ask us to do anything.
It's a newly created line of collectible CDs. It celebrates the anniversaries of Disney's most cherished and classic properties that have been enchanting audience for generations through 2015. Walt Disney Records will celebrate 12 anniversaries, including Pinocchio, Fantasia, Cinderella, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, Mary Poppins, The Lion King, and Toy Story, among others. To honor these musical landmarks, Walt Disney Records, The Legacy Collection, will feature the beloved original soundtracks plus valuable documentary content that tells the story behind the music. Each album will feature newly created artwork from Lorelei Bove, a visual development artist at Walt Disney Animated Studios, worked on Tangled, Winnie the Pooh, and Wreck-It Ralph. The illustrations inspired by the original properties will celebrate Disney's rich heritage and create a unified look for the entire collection. So they have one called Disneyland, Lady and the Tramp, of course, Toy Story is mentioned, Pinocchio, Fantasia, The Little Mermaid, Sleeping Beauty, Mary Poppins, The Lion King, Pocahontas, The Aristocats, Cinderella. They're all available now, it says, but then some of these they have like a little, like red light kind of thing there. I don't know what that means. So I'm going to click on one and see what happens. It says it's available now. This is Fantasia. 4-disc collectible edition includes the original Leopold Stokowski soundtrack, the digital re-recording by Irwin Kostel, the original score for the deleted Clair de Lune sequence, 2 bonus tracks, The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Peter the Wolf, both read by Sterling Holloway. Enchanting illustrations, original concept art, and more. How much are these things?
I don't know.
I don't either. That's what I'm going to click buy now. $39.98 or $29.98. $39.98 is a CD plus the lithograph artwork. So not too bad, I guess, for, you know, very niche things. Kind of worth looking into.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I guess Cinderella was the last one released, I assume, if I'm going by what this looks. What is on the Disneyland collection? Walt Disney.
Probably all the songs from the rides and stuff.
Includes over 50 songs featuring the original soundtrack of musical memories of past and present attractions. liner notes that tell the story of the property, enchanting illustrations, the original concept art by Lorelei Bove. Now, this one has a little accent above the E, so... Disc 1, Disneyland Park, Walt Disney's Dedication, yeah, Pirate's Life for Me, Bear Band Serenade, I'm just looking through some of these, Matterhorn Yodelers, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience theme, Disc 3, A Bug's Life Suite, The Cleaner, California Screaming, there's so much more, I'm just kind of looking through really quickly. Wow, that is something else. You can find these at DisneyMusicEmporium.com, so... Thanks for turning me on to that, Jason. Didn't know those existed. Matthew Marks has written us.
Yes, he has.
He says, thanks for setting the record straight on Hans Zimmer's work on Pirates. I had it backwards in my head. I thought he did the first movie and came up with the theme, then Klaus Badelt did the later ones. So maybe Disney just said, well, Klaus's work sounds like Hans Zimmer's work on Gladiator and Muppet Treasure Island anyway, so we might as well just get Hans Zimmer to do the sequels. I'm kidding. That's probably not fair to Klaus. I have read, he says, both Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. You can either get them packaged as one book or separately. I believe they were either free or $1 each on Kindle. I thought they were terrific, and although the writing style is different, my two-word review of these movies is the same as my two-word review of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Delightfully absurd. As I read through the books, I kept thinking to myself, this is so ridiculous. I love it. I was talking Disney with my family the other day, and it was pointed out that there are a couple of gaps in quality in Disney history. We've already been through the obvious ones on the show, but I'd forgotten that after the Disney Renaissance, we're going to bump into another gap. I'm not sure where the Renaissance is considered to end, but between Lilo and Stitch and Tangled, there are movies that came out that I barely remember existing. And I think the last one that I'd ever heard of... I think at least one that I'd never heard of. Home on the Range, I'm looking at you. So I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Keep up the great work, and may the mouse be with you. That's from Matt Marks. So, when does the Renaissance, is it considered to have an ending time?
I think it ends somewhere around that Lilo and Stitch time frame, probably. Yeah.
Then we get into some stuff.
Some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Freaking The Emperor's New Groove.
That's right. Well, okay.
Oh my god.
So the Renaissance, you think, still goes through that?
I don't know. I have to think about it more.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really thought about
it. It'll be interesting because the one we're talking about tonight actually kind of is a, not a dip in quality per se, but definitely, as we'll see and we'll talk about, it underperformed.
Yeah, it did.
Compared to Little Mermaid.
It did.
All right, let's get ready. I'm about to be taken to task, I believe, by Sarah.
All right, so here's an email from Sarah. Sarah has sent us several emails, but she always sends them to the wrong email address.
Well, they
send forwarded them to the correct email address, and so here they are. Well, at least this one. We're reading Sarah's Music 10. Dearest Magically Melody... I can't read all the M's.
That'd be Melodious.
Magically Melodious Mouseketeers. What do you call that when things are all start with the same letter?
Alliteration.
Love the music episode of DVT. Filled me all sorts of good feels. I made a list, too. I did not include many of the most popular songs because those poor songs are wore out and need a break. Some songs made the list because they seem to pop up a lot in my everyday life, like number 10, and others because of their catchy tunes, like number 7 and number 6. Most of them are favorites because they are tied to happy memories and make me smile when I hear them. So without further ado, here is my top 10 Disney songs. Number 10, Whistle While You Work from Snow White. Practically every single time someone mentions work is when she sings this. Number 9, Ma Belle Evangeline. That's from Princess and the Frog. And she says, can we just appreciate the genius of Jim Cummings for a second here? I've seen Princess and the Frog multiple times. And I never really think of this song, oddly enough. It's a great song that I never really think of it.
I've never seen it yet. Haven't seen it yet.
Number 8, Open Road from the Goofy movie.
kind of a cheat because it's not one of the numbered films, enumerated
films. It is a cheat.
But I will always allow people to cheat when they bring up the Goofy movie.
Yes, and I also let her cheat because she used a fangirl flail here.
Of course, of course. and Goofy is her favorite character, so...
Yes, here we go. Speaking of, that just reminded me of something that I wanted to add to Disney Watch.
Okay.
All right, back to her email. Number 7, Wanna Be Like You from The Jungle Book. It's got a jazzy beat and makes you want to dance.
Yes, it does.
Number 6, He's a Tramp from Lady and the Tramp. A jazzy little number that is so unexpectedly awesome. I agree. Number 5, Out There from Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's grand, it's epic, it's all about appreciating life. Good choice. Number 4, Reflections from Mulan. It's just a beautiful song. Number 3, Won't Say I'm in Love from Hercules. So underappreciated. I agree. Number 2, You'll Be in My Heart from Tarzan. Oh, it just tugs at the heartstrings. And she also says something about the dulcet sounds of Phil Collins.
That one does kind of tug at the heartstrings.
It does tug at the heartstrings. I like the Usher version, actually.
Usher has a version?
He does. See if you can find it.
I will.
Number 1, These Little Wonders from Meet the Robinsons. It's the most underrated song ever. It's just so beautiful. A reminder that life is made up of little moments rather than epic events. Music is what feelings sound like, from Anonymous.
That's a good quote.
It is a great quote. Magically yours, Sarah.
All right. Well, I didn't realize Usher had a version. Oh, I'll Lord.
Come stop your crying, it will be all right.
Sing it, Usher.
Just take my hand, hold it tight now. I will protect you from all around you. I will be here, don't you cry. For one so small, you seem so strong now.
I'm a grooving. I didn't realize.
I love it.
Is this on the soundtrack, or was this like a thing where people covered Disney songs, or what? What is
there's
it from?
An album. They do several albums where they get famous people to cover songs.
Okay.
And it was on one of those.
Nice.
Yeah, I love that version of it. It makes me dance, and it's just, I just love Usher.
Usher knows how to get you up dancing now.
I love Usher.
Usher will make you dance. If you want to be me. Anyhow. Cassandra, I think I'm pronouncing her name right.
I think so.
Says, Steve and Teresa, I only found your podcast a couple of months ago and have spent the summer catching up on all the past episodes. Thank you for such a great podcast. I drive an hour one way to work each day, and your podcast makes my drive much more enjoyable. I've been a long-time Disney fan and have always wanted a great podcast on the subject, and you have filled that void. Well, thank you, Cassandra. Glad to do so. Your latest episode on The Little Mermaid was amazing. I haven't laughed that much in a long time. My passion for Disney knows no bounds, and it's wonderful to get to listen to people who share that passion. 2 years ago, I was Ursula for Halloween, not to be confused with Usher. And last year, I was Darkwing Duck. I'm also a quilter and a quilt designer, and I'm working on a major project based on Beauty and the Beast. My last project was a Darth Vader quilt for my 5-year-old cousin. Prior to that, I finished a quilt by another designer featuring the Sword and the Stone. My love for quilting and Disney have merged on an ambitious project. It is my hope to design and craft a quilt based on each Disney animated film. A large undertaking, but one that will be well worth it. On a side note, did either of you happen to check out American Experience on PBS this week? On Monday and Tuesday, they aired a new 2-part documentary on Walt Disney. It was a great 4 hours of television. Like other American Experience projects, it was an honest look back at the man we all love. It's definitely worth checking out for any Disney fan. I think they're available for viewing on PBS's website. Well, sorry for the lengthy email. That was, because it was so long, Cassandra. And thanks again for such a great podcast. May the force be with you. And she attached some pictures of the quilts that she did. The Darth Vader one for her nephew looks really cool. I kind of want it. And the Sword and the Stone one is really neat as well. It's got all the characters. Different patches are different characters and, doing in different poses and different things. She's got Merlin as a fish and Arthur as the squirrels and the owl, Archimedes, and Madame Mim is there. And it's all the centerpiece is Arthur looking at the sword and the stone. So really cool looking quilt there. And rather large because you can see someone holding it up to their head and it's touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Cassandra. Cassandra, we're glad you found us. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And I want to say something about the Little Mermaid episode really quickly, Teresa, since you brought
that up. You've gotten so much awesome feedback.
I'm feeling like I should just move out of the way and let you and my sister do this show from now on.
And are you kidding? And I felt like you and your sister should do this show.
And me just sit there and listen to you guys go at it. I wish you guys could have seen her just look around as though she was looking at an audience saying, hello, thanks for having me, that kind of thing, because it was ridiculous. Several days...
I listened back to it, by the way, mm-hmm. and I was laughing just as hard as I was laughing before. And I had forgotten about some of the weird stuff we said.
Yes. Well...
Oh, I love that part, the penguin part. Oh my God, the penguins on my body.
I can't believe that I've never heard her do that or never heard anyone say that. I'm like, that is hilarious. And so she sent me a text with her and two other friends of ours. Like, she sent me a video of them just singing it. Oh, my God, there's penguins on my body. Oh, my God, there's penguins on my body. And I was like, this is ridiculous. A few days after that podcast aired, I got something in my house in the mail for her. And it was a signed picture of Ariel from one of the parks. And just a really neat thing. And she was super excited about it. And so I know who set that up via thanks to the Twitter stuff. And I just want you to know she was thrilled by that. And so thank you so much for doing that for my baby sister. Meant a lot to me that that you guys did that for her. So, yeah, that was
a good time.
Where's I don't know. I'm just saying. it's nothing I set up. I was reached out to because, you know, it's just Becca, man. That's what Becca does to people. She wins them over.
No, it's really cool. I'm so glad they did that for her.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
So.
Really neat.
Thanks so much. And she asked, well, who did this? And even though I know, I just kept saying, well, it was Ariel. She heard the podcast. She was a big fan. like my sister is not, you know, employed at a college as a, you know, as in an administrative role. And like, she's not a grown butt woman and a professional, you know, like I'm still treating her like she's a, you know, 7 years old. Well, Ariel heard it and she really enjoyed it. So
that's how you should do it.
Yeah. That's, keep the magic alive. That's what I say.
Yep.
Well, Teresa, there's one more here.
You have to read this one. Okay. I can't do this one justice.
Many of you guys know from the past couple of episodes the saga of one of our emailers and his friend, Eric, who lives his life by the creed of Dodger and has taken that to the extreme. And, of course, Teresa told him, she gave the advice, don't take advice from a dog.
Yeah, song was meant for a dog.
Well, Daniel emails in and he says, I too have a friend named Eric who lives his life according to the movies he watches. Far from amusing, his recent behavior has caused me great stress. Eric has been obsessed with Back to the Future. Sadly, the long-term exposure to the radioactive materials combined with the constant lightning strikes has left him with only a few months to live. Unfortunately, on the one occasion he did get his time machine to work, he used his power to go back in time with his family to Walt Disney World in 1989. He figured it would be cheaper back then, but all they did while they were there was to harass Frank Thompson or Frank Thomas at some sort of signing. This is a man who listens to the podcast and takes in every bit of it. I say all this to ask if Steve could explain how eight tracks work after he's done explaining VCRs. I mean, aren't they really just big cassette tapes? Eight tracks are a little bit different than cassette tapes. I'm not sure how they work. I think they're called eight tracks because there were only eight tracks on them. And I think you could jump from track to track on those little things. I don't quite remember fully, but I do remember they do look like giant cassette tapes. But I thought, Daniel, that is the genius of Daniel. And he is...
You know what's even funnier right now?
What's that?
Is that Daniel's in the chat and Dylan's in the chat and Dylan doesn't understand. Was that about me?
Yes, Dylan, he improvised an email based on your story. And basically he's saying the family that kept you from getting to meet Frank Thomas was a time-traveling family from the future.
His friend Eric.
It was his friend Eric who's living his life. So his life has caused multiple people pain, including you. And so there you go. So we must find Eric and make recompense on behalf of Dylan for messing Dylan's situation up that day. Poor Dylan. Well, that's our emails, guys. You can email us at vaulttalk@gmail.com, vaulttalk@gmail.com. We've got tons, and one of these days we might just have to do a straight-up just feedback episode, Teresa.
I think so, because we're getting kind of overwhelmed. And, you know, we do skip around a little bit, especially when we get emails from people who have found us randomly, because we really, really like those.
Yes, and we want to keep them around. So we want to keep all of you around. That sounded terrible. Let's just Disney.
Hey, watch it. Watch it.
Watch yourself. Pause. Who goes there?
Watch it now. Watch it. Watch it.
Watch out, my boy.
Disney Watch.
Just a couple of things to talk about this week, Teresa. You did see the American... We got tons of tweets and emails about this, and I wasn't able to watch it. The American Experience that they did on Walt Disney on PBS. How was it?
I enjoyed it. You know, a lot of it I already knew. It was largely based on a book that was written that is a huge book, and it is a 30-plus hour audiobook that I've listened to.
Wow.
And so a lot of it I already knew, but I think they did a really good job including all of the light side of Walt as well as the dark side. They definitely talked about the strike, which we've talked about before.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of led up to Disney World and, you know, his death. They didn't really make his death as emotional as I've seen on other documentaries. Mm-hmm. I was expecting it to be more emotional. I did cry. not a surprise to anybody. Actually, it was really funny. Greg fell asleep while we were watching it, and he wakes up, and I've got tears coming down my face, and he's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "Walt just died." And he was like, "Oh, okay."
Good night.
Goodbye.
All right, I'm going back to sleep now. So comprehensive, as they do, and I believe Cassandra even said it was very, you know, it was a balanced look at him, you know, that it
was. It really was, and I still have it on my DVR, actually. So, you know, I can rewatch it, should I feel so compelled.
Nice. I need to check it out. You know, PBS has a little app where you can watch some of their stuff, and of course online you can watch their stuff, so I've heard so much good about it that I need to take the time to watch it. But with fall TV being back and I'm still not through with my...
Oh my gosh, so much awesome fall TV.
Yeah, I'm still not through with my binge watching of Cheers. So
You're doing that too? So are we.
Oh, really? Where are you guys at? What season are you guys
in? Oh my gosh, I think we're on like maybe four or five. Woody's there.
Yes.
Coach Don.
Okay.
And we just saw the episode where this guy that Diane, I guess, maybe dated or hung out with when she was in Europe,
mm-hmm.
when she didn't get married.
Right.
He has a plane and he's flying the plane. And then he like dies.
Yes.
But doesn't die. And like.
And Sam's just pushing all the buttons. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure I'll figure something out.
And then they start talking about, like, you know, what their future would have been like and all this stuff. And then he pops up out of nowhere and he's still alive.
Yeah. I remember that one. I'm a little bit ahead of you guys. And I find myself at times laughing out loud, and other times like, why am I still watching through this show? It's such a product of its time, but it's, you know, it's good. I never watched it when it originally aired. It always came
Neither
on
did
after,
I.
It
I
always
never,
came on after my bedtime. And so
I've never seen it until now. Like, I've seen, I think I've seen pieces of episodes, you know, so I'm like, when does Kirstie Alley come in, you know? But like, I've never seen it. And so I'm just like, this is awesome.
Yeah. So I've been watching. That's funny. I've been watching that too. Are you guys going to go to Frasier after that?
We actually did Frasier. Oh, okay. We did Frasier before.
See, I've never watched Frasier either, so I was going to
Greg
do this
loves
and then go to Frasier.
Frasier. He loves Frasier, so we did that first. But like, and then we, you know, I made him watch all of Friends, and like, I like Cheers, but Cheers is no Friends.
No,
it's
not at all.
There's mm-hmm. it is not Friends in any way. Mm-hmm. And I you know, sometimes when I don't know what to watch, and I'm just like, I don't know, and there's nothing on Netflix, and I've been scrolling forever. I just start Friends over from the beginning.
Yes.
You know, so I'm currently rewatching through Friends again. I'm in season two for like the 50th time.
Season two has one of my favorite episodes of all time with one of my favorite Friends moments.
Which one?
It's when Joey and Chandler take Ben as a baby Ben on the bus and they leave him there.
And they have to go claim him
at the department.
Ducks are clowns.
And he goes and they go to flip for it and he's like, all right, we'll say heads as ducks. Joey says, we'll say heads as ducks because ducks have heads. And Chandler just stops and looks at him and says, what kind of scary ass clowns came to your birthday party?
Oh, I love Friends.
Yes.
So much. Anyway, this is not a friendship.
No, sorry. Moving on.
Talking about TV. There's a new show that comes on Tuesday nights that I am in love with.
Really?
I love it so much, but I am also upset because there is no Ralph, and I want to start a petition for where's Ralph?
He'll be on.
He better.
He will be.
But oh my God, I love it. The first episode when Kermit says, my life is a bacon-wrapped hellhole,
Can't say hell.
It's hell.
Sam the Eagle. I'm really torn on. We're talking about the Muppets, by the way. I'm really torn on it. There are a few, like on the most recent episode. Did you see this Tuesday night's episode? Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I did.
With Josh Groban, where Kermit's like, we're finally out of Code Green. Yay! It's just a Kermit that I'm not. He's a little less sensitive than I'm used to Kermit being about things. And there are glimpses of, you know, the Muppets that I grew up with and loved in there. But it's a little too adult humor for me, you know, a little too blatantly adult humor for me. But that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying it. I do like it. I loved watching Pepe sign everybody's name on the card. And then he just blew on the pen like that's it, you know, like a gun. The line of the night, though, on this most recent episode for me was the trumpet player from the Electric Mayhem said, we love us some gas station sushi.
Okay, the line of the two episodes so far that's my favorite is when Animal says, too many women, too many towns.
That's right. Too many towns, too many women.
No
more touring for Animals. Too many towns, too many towns, too many women. Yeah. My friend Derek loved that line as well.
I love that. I love, you know, I feel like the humor of the Muppets is there, but I love the fact that it's adult humor because it's just like it. It's just so fitting. It's like, you know, that these Muppet characters deep down have these personalities because they're all adults, you know?
Right.
And freaking Fozzie stealing stuff from Jay Leno. I'm like, come on, that's not going to fit under your hat.
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, it's funny because I'm like, why? They've made Fozzie one of the more damaged people of the group, which is a little disappointing to me. There's just something about, like, if you watch the old Muppet Show, there was definitely adult skewing humor on there, but it was a lot more clever. It was very concealed. You know, here it's like, it's not, it's not as concealed. It's not as clever as I think as like Jim Henson and Frank Oz used to be. Having said that, I mean, I enjoy it. I'm not going to not watch it, you know. But it's definitely a different Muppets than I'm used to, and I'm having to get used to it. I'm having to ease my way into it. But
you know what cracks me up is the people, the moms or whoever, got all upset because it's not a family show. And I'm like, clearly you didn't see the trailers where they said it was going to be adult Muppets with adult humor. So if you're surprised by that, then you're dumb.
I wasn't surprised by it. I'm with you. I know. I knew what they were advertising. So I was a little trepidatious running up to it. And everyone, just because of my love of the Muppets, I know everyone was expecting me to be like, yay. But I was just kind of like, well, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. And like I say, it's been funny. I've enjoyed it, you know, and I'll continue to enjoy it. The stuff with him and Lawrence Fishburne, with Kermit and Lawrence Fishburne, was tripping
great.
Me out. When Lawrence Fishburne said when he's like, your show sucks. And then he pulled him. He's like, hey, man, I'm really sorry about that. You know, I just had a rough night last night. And Kermit's like, oh, yeah, what happened? I watched your show and it sucks.
I love Josh Groban on there, and I loved how Kermit was like, move out of the way, dork. And he's like, think you forget I'm a frog. I can jump.
And he just leaps right into his chest.
But then I love how he figured out how to get to Piggy, where he comes in and he says, this says, you know, that you're an independent woman, but you're not afraid to say that you need the help of a man. Yeah. And I was just like...
Well, and it's just too, just... When she sees, before he ever says that, though, she's just in shock at the sign where it says Josh Groban presents Miss Piggy. And you could just tell it's because someone else suddenly has top billing. Like, everything about the diva and Miss Piggy just swept over her. And she started making that Miss Piggy noise that she makes. And then she's, we're done. And just.
I like Miss Piggy with straight hair. You know, I don't typically like Miss Piggy, but I like her with straight hair because the curls get on my nerves. So, I like this new look we've got going on here.
I want to see her actually sit down and interview someone, though. I want to actually see that part of the show and see how that kind of stuff goes. But anyway, that's happening this fall. Also, Once Upon a Time is back.
Yes, and the first episode made my jaw drop.
Well, okay. Again, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer on this. The Ulysses Upper when we get to the Rescuers Down Under, but I don't want to be the Debbie Downer on anything. But when we got to the end of that episode, I'm like, oh, again?
Yeah, I kind of had that same feeling.
It's the same thing that's happened again and again and again. Memory loss and jumping ahead in time, and now we're gonna have to go back in time. It's like, just why don't we just do the whole season, you know, without this moment here, or let this moment be the mid-season finale kind of thing. And just follow this crowd along with us, because now it's going to all be flashback anyway.
I loved Merida. She was great.
Yes. Yeah. I was so scared she was going to die.
Me too.
I was like,
me too.
Oh my gosh, this is where it happens. So,
well, we got some other news.
Yes. One other thing here.
They have announced a Mary Poppins sequel.
What?
And all I have to say is it's stupid. I do not agree. I'm contemplating boycotting it by not going to see it and not giving them my money. Mary Poppins was perfect the way it is. There is no reason to do a sequel to Mary Poppins. I don't care if Emily Blunt is going to be Mary Poppins. And even though she would be a great Mary Poppins, I still... No. And then also to all the people out there that are saying, well, why aren't they just getting Julie Andrews to do it? You're all dumb, because you don't understand that she had surgery on her throat and the surgeon messed up and ruined her vocal cords and she can't sing. So she can't do it. Even if she wanted to, she can't do it. So I don't know. I guess I need to wait and hear more of what they're going to do, but my initial reaction right now is boycott that.
I have to agree.
I can't say on the show.
I have to agree with Teresa. I just don't think this is a good idea. They may win me over. You know, they've won me over with the Jungle Book thing. Even with that, I'm still kind of like, is this something we really needed to revisit in this form? And I guess so. I mean, with all these things, they're doing live action, but I just don't.
This one's just not necessary.
Yeah, I feel like we said everything we need to say with the first Mary Poppins. I really do. But, you know, the thing about the new Jungle Book is it gives me a chance to be like, Mowgli, I want your fire. With this, I don't know. I mean, you can't do Mary Poppins. I mean, kind of makes me
sad. I don't know. I can't. I can't get behind it. I can't.
Well, can you get behind Rescuers Down Under?
Crikey!
Okay. Let's talk about it.
Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 29th full-length animated motion picture. Australia. Mysterious. Untamed. And for a young boy named Cody and his magnificent golden eagle, it was a world of adventure and discovery.
Fire!
Until... they met the villain McLeach.
That bird's gonna make me rich.
An evil trapper who threatens to separate them forever.
It's time you learned how to fish for crocs.
No!
But though hope is running out, a message is on the way.
Separate help!
To the Rescue Aid Society.
There has been a kidnapping in Australia.
And two little heroes, Bernard and Bianca, are flying in.
Let's go for it!
It's the rescuers in the most dangerous mission ever.
We'll never make it!
Cinch up your seatbelts, mates.
Now, they're joining forces with their new friend Jake and his army of misguided mates.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Aw, oh, Frank, give it a rest.
They're flying into action, riding into danger.
Missed.
In the most breathtaking rescue mission ever.
No!
Hey, who killed the music?
Oops.
This holiday season, join Bernard, Bianca, Jake, and...
Wilbur!
...in an adventure above the ordinary in the land down under. Walt Disney Pictures, The Rescuers Down Under.
Throw another shrimp in a barbie, sports fans. Here we come!
Yes. We've all heard the fan theories that are out there regarding our favorite Disney and Pixar films. You know... all of the Pixar movies take place in the same universe. Anna and Elsa's parents were on the ship that wrecked, and Ariel collected all her stuff from. The list goes on and on. Well, get ready to have your hair blown back. Secure your socks lest they be knocked off. You may want to be sitting down for this. Hold on to your hats. Prepare to be amazed. All those things. I have a fan theory for you. The Rescuers Down Under is an origin story for a real-life superhero that left the Earth much too soon. The Rescuers Down Under is all about a little boy in Australia who lives to help animals whenever they find themselves in trouble. He befriends a golden eagle and finds himself in the crosshairs of one of the very poachers whose efforts he's trying to thwart. The Rescue Aid Society is called in to help rescue the boy from his captor and end up saving not only him, but also the golden eagle and her little egg babies. Sure, there's a hint of a love triangle, John Candy's in there, a great score, but the real shocker is this. The little boy, though named Cody in the movie, is really a young Steve Irwin. That's right. Just look at him. Looks just like the Crocodile Hunter. I'm telling you, origin story. And I believe every moment of it is true. I believe it's a true story. This is The Rescuers Down Under. And here's Teresa with some history.
I'm sure you know everything there is to know about the castle.
Oh, well, actually... oh, yes, I do.
As you can see, the pseudo-facade was stripped away to reveal a minimalist rococo design.
What do we got here, Teresa?
Well, I'll tell you what we don't have.
What's that?
We don't have reasoning as to why they made this movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Couldn't find it anywhere. I searched and searched and searched. I found nothing.
So
if anybody knows... why they decided to make this movie, where the story came from. I mean, I know it came from the books, but like, how they decided to do, I don't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
I don't know. But I can tell you that it came out on November 16th of 1990. Mm-hmm. It is the 29th animated film, and it was a major underperformer at the box office compared to Little Mermaid and the other films of the Disney Renaissance era.
Not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either. It is notable, though. It was the first traditionally animated film to completely use the new computerized CAPS process, which we know becomes Pixar. So, the animators' drawings and the background paintings were scanned into computer systems instead, where the animation's drawings are inked and painted by digital artists and later combined with the scanned backgrounds and software that allows for camera positioning, camera movements, multiplane effects, and other techniques.
It's definitely there. I mean, like, you can see it from the very outset of the movie, the opening, you know, title sequence and everything is all computer. And I loved it. I loved watching it, especially in the high definition version that's available to stream on Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm. On opening weekend, it grossed $3.5 million. It was fourth in its opening weekend after Home Alone, Rocky V, right?
Mm-hmm.
V5, mm-hmm. And Child's Play 2.
Listen, anything that opens up against Home Alone, you're done for.
You're done for. So the film eventually went on to make $27,931,461 in the United States.
Well done, Teresa.
Thanks. I did it. Making it the least successful box office performance of the Disney Renaissance.
Hmm.
Its budget is an estimated $37
million. Wow.
$931,000.
So $10 million under budget they made back.
Mm-hmm. The Rescuers was released on VHS a year later in September 1992. 2 years later. It was re-released on August 1st, 2000 as part of the Walt Disney Gold Classic Collection, marking its first time on DVD and the last time it would ever be released on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
The Rescuers Down Under was then released alongside The Rescuers on Blu-ray, mm-hmm, in a two-movie collection. That's what I have. Came out on August 21st, 2012 to commemorate the film's 35th anniversary, and it is still available today.
It's not back in the vault. We feel like we just need to... We put a lot out there, and to put it back in the vault would be kind of pointless at this time. So we're just going to let it stay out there with the people. The people demand The Rescuers and The Rescuers Down Under, so... We're going to pull some princesses off the shelf. We may bring the Lion King back in, but we're not. We're going to leave those guys out there. Enjoy it. Not in the vault.
You know what? And we actually have, now that you decided to do that.
Yeah.
We have a message on Facebook.
Oh.
From somebody who said he thinks he knows who the vault keeper sounds like.
It sounds like me just doing a voice.
It sounds similar to Mr. Khaki from South Park that says, "Mkay," and it does.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Drugs are bad, okay. I don't remember. I didn't see that message.
Oh, I don't know.
A lot of times I don't see them. I don't see Facebook messages, so. But yeah. Anyhow,
So that's all I've got. I really didn't. There's not a whole lot as far as like production stuff. Some of the other things are production related and things I put in fun facts. But yeah, like, I could not find anything about why they decided to actually make this movie.
I thought there was something that was said in our Rescuers.
Yeah, they were talking about doing a TV show, but which ended up being Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
All right, but when I went to look. When I went to look for the notes, that was one where you didn't get all the notes put in, and you were kind of doing it just off what you had written down in front of you rather than sharing the notes there. So much for that's all I got. I've got no other place to look right now. So let's get some fun facts.
Fun facts, woo! Say it proud and geek out loud. It's fun facts.
Okay, so this film, The Three Caballeros, mm-hmm, Fantasia 2000, and Winnie the Pooh, are the only Disney sequels that are part of the official Disney animated canon. And there comes that word.
Okay.
Because they were produced by Walt Disney Feature Animation and not one of the off really? Grand animation.
So, like,
divisions.
The Tigger movie wasn't considered?
No, because wow. it was created at one of the other animation studios, not Disney's feature animation.
That surprises me. I would have figured the Tigger movie was all up in there.
Mm-mm.
Hmm.
So this film also uses CGI elements throughout, such as the field of flowers in the opening sequence, right. McLeach's truck,
yep.
and a perspective shot of Wilbur flying over the Sydney Opera House
yes.
and New York City. All of that CGI. Mm-hmm. The Rescuers Down Under was the first animated film for which the entire final film elements were assembled and completed within a digital environment. So, however, the film's marketing approach did not call attention to the use of caps or the use of digital. They didn't broadcast it, but it was the very first one to be full digital.
Okay. I wonder, I mean, I guess it's 1990 at this point. You don't have, I feel like, you know, fandoms were really, you had to go after fandom back in those days. You know, you had to join a fan club where you actually would have to write in stuff and, you know, and get magazines and everything, and it wasn't like the internet today. Today something like that would be big news. You know, we'd all be talking about it. It'd be one of the points that we'd be talking about for weeks on end. Oh, did you hear Disney's actually doing this all in computer, that kind of thing, because of the ease of getting into fandom and that sort of thing. But it is interesting when you watch it and you compare it to what we've seen. And I'll even say this, that with The Little Mermaid and this, the trailers for these movies were much different. Like, I kept waiting for the corner to turn on the trailers. Like, we play the audio from all these different trailers. You know, and back in the day, there'd be like 2.5-3 minute trailers where it's almost like they're just telling you the story and saying, now come watch the whole thing. And not the well put together like snippets that, you know, show the funny moments, the exciting moments, and all that stuff. And that corner really didn't turn until The Little Mermaid. It was a little bit there with Oliver and Company, but The Little Mermaid was the first trailer, and then this trailer was a really good trailer for a cartoon. So it is interesting they didn't use that in any of their promotion, especially when you consider how much stuff we talk about today with the production of movies and stuff that we're into, like, oh my gosh, can you believe they're doing this? Well, you know, fully motion captured character and blah blah blah, yaggity schmaggity blah blah. So,
yeah,
do you think that would have helped the film at all? I don't know.
In the 90s, probably not, because mm-hmm. a lot of people, you know, and even still today with Disney, people love the classic animation, mm-hmm. you know, and there's just something nostalgic and special about it, and I feel like, you know, they really couldn't do that until they had Pixar and they released Toy Story, and then they could have a division. You know, it's like, look right. at this awesome computer CGI stuff, yeah. you know. And I think that that opened up an avenue for those kind of films.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. Like, Frozen is done this way. It's the digital animation and all that, you know, just as Big Hero 6 is or whatever. But it still looks like classic Disney, you know. Frozen mm-hmm. looks like classic Disney animation. It really does to me, but it's not
right.
But you have to be able to have both sides of the coin. Like, you have to have the Toy Story, you know, 3D roundy puffiness, and then yeah.
Well, and I think that's kind of become the accepted model of animation these days, you know, because more and more, even on TV, more and more stuff is going that route. So. But I'll tell you.
Speaking of things yes. that are not.
Okay.
Nickelodeon is releasing an all-new channel full of all the 90s cartoons.
Yeah, and I'm just a little too old for that to get me too really excited.
Well, I'm excited.
I know you are. It's really obvious. Like, it's interesting to watch this movie just from that technical standpoint, because when Wilbur and them are coming into Australia through, you know, through the Sydney Opera House and everything, that shot, the Opera House and the landscape around it, looks like what we would call pre-viz animation today. When mm-hmm. you watch like some of those uncompleted Clone Wars reels and everything, you know, there's just no real texture to anything. It's definitely got more of a 3D vibe to it, but, you know, and it fits within that world, but it's not until they pull away and it shows the reverse of it that you see where they've hand-drawn it in its animation, you know, typical 2D animation where you can see some more texture and landscaping around it. But when they're coming in, it's just a couple of flat squares and then those opera house buildings rising up from it. So definitely noticeable in a moment like that. you know, it's almost like they didn't, it's obviously of a different time, and it's obviously early on, still early on in this process for animation. So sorry mm-hmm. to run my mouth about that.
Oh, it's okay. So this is Disney's second animated film to not include any musical numbers. The first was The Black Cauldron.
Are we sure about that? Was there not another film before that that didn't have any musical numbers?
I don't think so.
I could have sworn there had to be more, but I guess not. I'm going to trust your fun fact. That one blows
Somebody
my hair back a little bit.
Might be able to prove me wrong, but that's what I found. Let's see. It took 415 artists and technicians to produce the film. Five members of the team actually traveled to the Australian outback to observe, take photographs, and draw sketches to properly illustrate it. Let's see. The film did below studio's expectations, so as a result, Jeffrey Katzenberg pulled all Rescuers TV advertising.
Oh.
He said, nope.
Well,
no more.
Well, let's not.
Since it's already doing bad, let's go ahead and make it do worse.
Yeah, let's not try to get it more exposure. I mean, listen, Rocky V, in its opening weekend, people found out, no, we don't want to go see that again, and the bad vibe started to spread quickly on Rocky V. Home Alone was going to be Home Alone. You're not going to, you know, get. But surely you could have rode a wave and made up some of your money just keeping people exposed to the thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I'm not a CEO of any corporation, so.
Well, neither is Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Another Rescuers movie was actually planned for 1996. But after the deaths of Ava Gabor and John Candy, this and all future Rescuers movies were scrapped. Yeah. Also, the financial failure kind of played into this, where they were like, well, maybe we shouldn't release any more Rescuers stuff. But nowhere in any of this research did I find why they made this one in the first place. The film is known in other places of the world as Bernard and Bianca in the Land of the Kangaroos.
Oh.
And it's known as that in countries where the phrase Down Under is not as well known and is also deemed offensive.
Okay, but why Bernard and Bianca? Why not just the Rescuers in the Land of Kangaroos? We're going to really make this a mouthful, guys.
Bernard and Bianca in the Land of the Kangaroos.
I mean, it takes you 2 hours just to say it. By the time you've bought the ticket for the movie's over.
Crikey.
Down
Under.
There we go.
The Rescuers Down Under.
And go ahead. I've got one more fun fact after this one.
Was preceded by a short mm-hmm. of Mickey Mouse called The Prince and the Pauper.
Oh, I remember that.
This was the second new Mickey Mouse short made since the 50s, and the first was Mickey's Christmas Carol, which accompanied the 83 re-release of The Rescuers.
Oh, that's some symmetry for you.
Mice.
I remember when The Prince and the Pauper came out. I remember that being a big selling point for things. Another fun fact is this movie is set in Australia, but there's really only one or two characters that have an Australian accent in the whole movie.
They are the pirates. Who knows? What? Just kidding. I was thinking of Jake. Okay, there was a thing. There was a reason for that. I was thinking of Jake, right? That's his name, mm-hmm. Jake. But then I was like, Jake and the Neverland Pirates. And then I was like, the pirates who don't do anything.
Here we go. Yeah.
That all happened in a span of about 3 seconds.
I understand. That's how the brain works. I do find it interesting that, you know, a couple of the animals had the accents. His mom, Cody's mom, has an Australian accent. The radio guy has an Australian accent. Everyone else, pure American. And in the case of George C. Scott, you know, he was General Patton, for crying out loud. In fact, I almost called him George Patton. he played that role, you know. So that was kind of weird to me. And there was one moment where Cody says something about his puck, meaning his pack, and it's the only time there's any type of affected accent on him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there's a fun fact for everyone. Go back and look and see. Even Frank doesn't have a
no.
have an Australian
you know, and
accent.
I was thinking that this is very much that Cody is really like, you know, Crocodile Hunter and everything.
Yeah.
And then it made me think, you know, I love Bindi Irwin.
Yes.
I love Bindi Irwin. And she's on Dancing with the Stars right now, and she's doing so amazing. And it's just like, ugh. I love Bindi Irwin.
I was a huge fan. And when I saw that kid run out, it's been years since I've seen this movie. And when I'm watching, I see him run out and run to go talk to those animals. And just looking at him, I'm like, they modeled this after a young Steve Irwin. They had to model this kid on a young Steve Irwin. He looks like he could be childhood Steve Irwin. And I'm like, this is his origin story. This is how he came to be the Crocodile Hunter. You know, because there wasn't an animal in the wilderness that man couldn't interact with. And he loved them, and he loved every single one of them, no matter how much they could kill you.
Poor Steve Irwin.
God rest his soul. Bob Newhart's back in this as Bernard. Eva Gabor is back as Miss Bianca. And we've got John Candy this go around as the Albatross, but he's not Orville, he's Wilbur. I believe the voice actor who done Orville had passed away at this point.
Maybe. But Wilbur.
Yeah. And listen, John Candy is just a delight in this movie. That character of Wilbur is just a delight. He's involved more in the story than Orville was in the original Rescuers. And rightfully so. I mean, right from the get-go, when they walk in on him and he's just dancing around singing and they cut the music. Hey, who cut the music? And to him at the end, sitting on those, help, help. And he's, don't you crack, don't you open. And, oh, you're kind of cute. Ow! You know, that's the way the movie ends. And so I just thought he was, I love John
Candy. He did
a really
good job.
I mean, of course, I love John Candy. As you have seen myself and your husband come to tears laughing. Big Bear chase me. Laughing.
I mean, and
John
it's
Candy.
So funny because, like, I'm not a huge John Candy fan. I like him in two movies. This one, and the other one, Cool Runnings. But that's just mostly because I didn't watch a lot of movies that he was in growing up. So, like, I watched Cool Runnings.
Yeah. Well, he was also in Home Alone, which opened up with this one. He was helping Kevin's mom get back to home, and he had his little band in the back.
That's right.
Which
Home Alone do you like better, one or two? Because nobody watches three.
The first one, I'm more familiar with it. I've seen it more. Tim Curry's in the second one, of course.
I love the second one.
I just, you know, that first one, I have great memories of my dad almost in tears watching Home Alone, just laughing so hard at everything. And I just couldn't believe how funny he thought it was. And so I was laughing at him, laughing at that. And so it'll always hold a special little place in my heart. Got to give a shout out to the great, and I mean legendary, Frank Welker, who does the Golden Eagle voice.
Yeah.
And of course, Joanna. What is Joanna?
She's like a lizard. Maybe like an iguanodon? No.
It's right
she's
here
too,
in the notes.
She's too slimy.
She's a goanna, which is like a giant iguana.
Like an iguana.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not an iguanodon. Just
right.
An iguana.
No. Like a giant iguana. A goanna. I love the animals in this. You know, there's the...
Oh my gosh, the koala cracks me up.
He's like,
and the little lizard with the thing.
Yeah, that's a frill lizard. One of the freakiest, they're one of the most harmless animals in the world, but they're one of the freakiest looking. Because what they do is, everyone take time, Google or YouTube frilled lizard, and watch a video of this thing. It'll just start running. It'll raise up on its hind legs. It'll open those frills up like the spitting dinosaur. On the first Jurassic Park, exactly. And it'll just run at you, and they're just tiny little guys. But Frank, the frill lizard, was hilarious.
Oh my gosh, he's so funny. Seriously, but the koala cracks me up.
Yeah,
and the kangaroo.
What's funny about the koala is koalas are supposed to be the most cuddly animals on the face of the planet, and he's like just, he is just like, yeah, we're never getting out of here. You're going to leave as a handbag. You're going to leave as a boots. You're going to leave as a purse, you know? And it's like, come on. I thought koalas were supposed to be nice.
Oh, so funny. But also so sad because yeah. They're all trapped in there.
Well, they got out. They got away.
Oh, yeah. McLeach makes me angry.
Yeah, well, he's supposed to. He's one of the great villains. As I was watching this, I'm like, I don't think this guy gets enough credit for being one of the great Disney villains. He's hunting and killing animals, and he's happy about it, okay?
He's like Clayton from Tarzan. Clayton!
And he's just a poacher. He's just, he's doing it illegally. He's wanted in Australia. And when this little boy is going to get in the way of him, trapping a golden eagle, and when the little boy knows that he's trapped the golden eagle, he goes ahead and gets rid of the, he's going to kill the kid. Like, no remorse whatsoever. This isn't like the crazy lady looking for the jewel or the big diamond in the first Rescuers. I mean, I guess she would have let the little girl die, but this man was going to actively murder this boy by feeding him to crocodiles. What a terrible, horrible way to die.
It'd probably be fast, though.
No, they grab you, they start twisting and death roll you. It'd been a terrible way to die. And then you end up just as an animal's poop. Come on. What? Come on. Terrible way to go.
I've never gone that far that you'd be animal poop.
Yeah. Terrible way to go. Terrible way to go. And I'll tell you, the stuff with Bernard and Bianca, there is a little bit of a jealousy there from Bernard to Jake.
Because Jake's handsome. He's a little kangaroo.
Well, and he's an adventure. He's a mouse, yeah. But it's an adventure, though. He's an adventurer, too, and he appears to be much more brave than Bernard is. But what I like is that though Bianca likes him, she's not into him the way that he's into her.
Mm-hmm.
When Bernard finally proposes to her, she's just like, of course. Like, this isn't even a question to me.
She's classy.
She is a classy dame. She's a classy broad. So that's a good thing. I like that they didn't really get too much into that whole thing. But there is the moment where Bernard wakes the razor back up. And it's growling at him. He just grabs him by the tusk and throws him down. He says, listen here, you. We got a he does Jake's speech to the snake. We got a long way to go, and you're going to get me there. Any questions? You got a problem with that?
He gets his nerve up.
Yes. Yeah, well, he's got to go save his woman, man. Mm-hmm. Got to go save his lady friend.
I did always think the big eagles were kind of weird.
The golden eagles?
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
I don't know why, though. I was always like, that bird's too big. It's not real.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure, yeah. It is a bird of prey. It's in the northern hemisphere. I don't know about the Australian golden eagle. I'm about to find out, though. Listen, we're in my territory now. We're going to be talking about some darn. We're going to be talking about some darn animal facts. Now you want to talk about fun facts? Shoot. Let's see. A rare golden eagle named Marahute. No, that's not what I'm looking into.
Marahute.
They're in the northern hemisphere, the most widely distributed species of eagle, but Australia's in the southern hemisphere. Maybe they did lie to us.
But when you Google Australian golden eagle and you go to images, you get Marahute.
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm learning something here as a near 40-year-old man. I thought that there was such a thing because I was always told there was such a thing.
By Disney?
Yeah. Here we go. All you ever want to know about golden eagles from National Geographic with pictures and everything. The powerful eagle is North America's largest bird of prey. and the national bird of Mexico.
Sí.
These birds are dark brown with lighter golden brown plumage on their heads and necks. They're extremely swift and can dive upon their quarry at speeds of more than 150 miles per hour. I'm trying to see. Let's see. Wingspan. 6 to 7.5 feet. Teresa, that's the size of you. That's bigger than you.
Wait, how much?
6 to 7.5 feet.
Oh my God!
From tip to tip.
That's bigger than me.
Yeah, you could lay across the back of a golden eagle.
Get me one, Steve. I want to fly.
I actually heard...
I know what song we should close out to.
What's that?
Think about it. I just said I want to fly.
Okay.
And we're talking about eagles.
All right. Just put it in the Skype chat. I'll see what I can do.
I was just seeing if you can figure it out.
I can't figure it out. I'm sorry. I actually recently heard an interview with a man who is a falconer. And he was on a podcast with a golden eagle. And he mentioned that this particular eagle had come at him one time thinking, I forget what had happened, but it was basically started to dive. I think he thought there was like some of his prey near him, and he didn't slow up, and he just smacked the guy at 150 miles an hour, knocked him out. He said, when I came to, he was just sitting there looking at me like, are you going to get up and give me something to eat or what? So yeah, I mean, golden eagles are real, but they're not, I guess they're not in Australia real. Mm. And that makes me sad. That makes me so sad. He killed the dad.
Yeah, because he's a bastard.
Hey, wow.
Sorry, but he is.
Hey, can we talk about really quickly the rules of talking animals in this movie?
Yeah, exactly. Why can't Marahute talk?
That's what I was thinking.
Why can't every other animal talk except for the bird?
Well, and Joanna kind of doesn't talk.
Yeah, what is up with that? But the frilled lizard talks?
Yeah. And
I'm so confused. There's no consistency here. Like, if birds aren't going to talk, okay, fine. But if one form of reptile is going to talk, then shouldn't all of them?
Exactly. Now, obviously, Joanna was very aware of what was going on. The bit with the eggs was pretty funny.
When she's eating them all. Mm-hmm. But the birds, I don't get it. Why can't birds? Owls in Disney lore can talk.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't there at one point a bird in there that I can't remember now. Now I'm trying to think. Because I was watching. I was like, I was going to be very keen to see, would there be another bird? Well, Wilbur, hello. Hello.
Oh, duh. Wilbur talks.
Yeah. And that was what I was saying. I'm like, well, Wilbur's talking. Why can't Marahute, which I'm not comfortable saying that name.
I don't like Marahute.
Marahute.
I'm not a fan of Marahute.
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 It sounds like a weird battle cry. Marahute.
Oh, crikey.
Crikey. Danger, danger.
Danger, danger.
When Frank frills out like this, he's saying, danger, danger, stay away from me. But you're not dangerous, are you? You're not going to hurt me, are you, mate? You're a good mate, aren't you? Man, I love the Crocodile Hunter back in the day. Woohoo! Golden Ooh. Eagle! Woohoo!
Golden Eagle!
Okay, now you sound like some Cockney woman from the wrong side of the tracks.
I don't even know.
This
crikey.
Is
that's crikey. All I can say.
This is crikey. Oh, man. They did. I love animal shows and stuff. So that's one of the things that even back in the day when we had this on VHS and would watch it, that's one of the things I loved was just seeing all these different things. I wanted to spend more time with the little platypus that was in jail, that was in the poacher prison. Because I love, I think that Disney should do a movie about a platypus. I mean, they've got, I know they've got Perry the Platypus over with
Phineas and Ferb. He's stupid, animated funny.
Oh my Atlanta. But yeah, there's so many great little animals in Australia that, you know, we could spend more time with. And I like the story of this. I felt like this story moved quicker. It's your typical, our hero gets, you know, or one of our heroes is kidnapped and the other heroes have to save him. And I thought just by showing the opening scene of him saving Marahute, I do not like that name, saving the Golden Eagle, you know, right out of the gate and befriending it, I thought that really set up who this kid was, that he really is, you know, a conservationist. He loves these critters. He loves the animals, and so he wants to help them out. Obviously, he can communicate with them, so he's kind of a Disney princess in that way. I think it has more to do with being a child than anything, though. And the scene of the telegraph going from, you know,
that was cool.
Australia up to New York, and they're playing the Rescue Aid Society march.
Mm-hmm.
The little Rescue Aid, you know, as it's going on. It's a. I like the score of this film, by the way. That's one of the first things that jumped out at me when I was watching it. The music of this film I thought was really good. I'm kind of over the moon about this movie, Teresa. I'm not going to lie to you. The more I'm sitting here talking about it, I'm like, I really like this movie.
I like it. I enjoy it, but I'm just not a fan of, like I like the Rescuers movies, right, but I'm not, like, crazy about them.
I didn't care for the first one that much. I'll be honest with you. Did not. But this one, I thought the humor hit just right. I like the score of the movie. I like the story a lot better. It didn't. The other one kind of bores me when I'm watching it. I know that's sacrilege for some people.
But I kind of one's better than the first one,
yeah,
for sure.
And I just really, this just kind of hits me in the right spot. You know, I really enjoy it. Look, there's some heavy hitters. Of course, Bob Newhart's a big heavy hitter when it comes to the world of comedy and television, that sort of thing. Eva Gabor, for crying out loud. Green Acres. Need I say
Green
more about that?
Green Acres.
John Candy is superstar. George C. Scott is Hollywood royalty. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he really is. So there's some incredible talent they got to be voices in this thing, which may account for some of the production costs, ladies and gentlemen. And then, like I say, just Frank Welker, his incredible voice, you know, work with, he was able to do, you know, they'd be like, well, you know, make this noise, and he'd just do it, you know? It's a really good cast. It's such a solid cast, and the characters are fun. I want to hang out with Frank more. I think he's my favorite character out of this whole thing, is Frank. When he gets on top of Joanna and is riding, and he does the, he's doing the cowboy stuff. He's like, howdy, howdy, howdy. It made me think of that time in Toy Story when where the shark pops out of the toy box wearing Woody's head. He's like,
hey, I'm Woody.
Howdy, 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 howdy. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Howdy. So, you know, I really, who was your favorite character in this? Not Marahute.
No, probably Jake.
Okay.
He's handsome.
Yeah. I like the
kangaroo mouse.
I like the conversation they have on the radio, and he's like coming in and he's looking, he's like, Albert, we don't have a runway for you. He's like, you're going to have to go somewhere else, mate. The runway's not long enough. He's like, and you hear Wilbur on the other line be like, you got to know how to talk to these guys. He's like, mm-hmm. We're coming in. And are they riding lightning bugs at one point? Since when do mice ride lightning bugs?
No, since this movie. Lightning bug.
I guess so.
So I've been quoting a line, you just made me think of it, from the Aristocats lately, because it's cricket season here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I'm the leader. I'll say what it was. It was a little old cricket bug.
Do we know how well this thing has done since it's been released on the Blu-rays and all the subsequent? I mean, has it? Obviously, it's never gotten a re-release in theaters, you know, and I don't know that this or Rescuers ever would again.
I will find out while But I mean, I like this movie. It's just, you know, I like other Disney movies more than the Rescuers movies.
Of course. Here's the thing. This movie, when I found out that they had future Rescuer movies planned, this movie makes me sad because I'm like, I could see where this would go. You know, I could see them if they'd all progressively get better, then we maybe head to something great. But of course, then, you know, it wouldn't be long after, or maybe even it was around the same time that Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers was hitting on TV.
Mm-hmm. So this one did, the number that I had for you, the $27 million.
Yeah,
that's what it's made.
Okay.
Lifetime gross.
Oh wow. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Bless their hearts. I guess they just took a bath on this one.
I guess so. So
there's to it. I'm sorry. I'm looking here, and yeah, Chippendale Rescue Rangers started in 89, is what I'm seeing here, or 88. Let me just go to the Wikipedia. Because August of 1988. And so it almost makes you wonder, why not just do a Chippendale Rescue Rangers movie? Same premise, everything, you know, just with those characters.
So, like The Lion King, for example.
Right.
Which comes out a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
Its lifetime gross is $422 million.
Yeah. This definitely underperformed to be in the Disney Renaissance era, but I'm just saying because it underperformed, I'm just telling you, I'm smitten with this movie. I really enjoyed it. Like, it's one that I wouldn't mind having in my collection.
Well, you should get it. The Blu-ray isn't good. I like the Blu-ray.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's out now that I know that it's out there, I might have to pick it up. So, you know, that's my takeaway from it, is it's one that I remember fondly, and it's one that upon watching it again years later, that it didn't diminish in quality to me.
No, it hasn't. I can still watch it and still feel the same. But, you know, the interesting thing is I don't really remember seeing this one as a kid. I remember seeing it older.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I mean, I remember we never saw it in a theater. I honestly for years thought this was like one of those direct-to-video sequel kind of things. Because it just suddenly one day appeared in our house on VHS for some reason. But we dug it back then, you know, and my younger brothers and sisters would all watch it, and I just being someone who I've always been kind of taken with animals and stuff, I think that's really what captured me with this, is they do a lot of the animal stuff in here, even though it's little bits here and there, you know, quick moments, but they really did try to capture as much of the wildlife as they could, whether it was in the, you know, poacher's prison or out and about, you know, with some of the bugs and then some of the other animals and everything. I got really worried about Cody when he fell into the water and those crocodiles had turned around from chasing McLeach. You know, somehow they just ignored him as he went on down the river right past him, I guess.
In the water.
Well, Teresa, anything else to say about the old Rescuers Down Under? Is there anything we're missing?
I don't think so. I mean, I think in general it's a really good movie. I mean, there's the scene with Wilbur when the Dr. Mouse and all of the nurse mice.
What is that? Okay, I love the scene. I think it's hilarious, but I'm like, this has nothing to do with anything else that's going on.
It's almost weirdly, like, sadistic.
Yes. Like, it's like, what are they doing? Why are they doing this to him?
You know? I felt like they were going to, like, molest him.
Well, I felt like they were going to kill him. You know, like, well, they were getting ready to do spinal surgery
really
on the guy.
I wasn't quite sure.
Well, they tranked him up pretty good.
Seriously.
Like, and they, like, shoved that cane. You know, give him the back brace. No, 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 no. Oh, my Lord. I've been skewered. He's like, I've been skewered.
John Candy made that whole scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost like it was written for John Candy. We're in a few years, again, in a couple of years, there'll be Aladdin that's released. And, you know, they just let Robin Williams go in, and we'll talk about this, of course, when we get there again. But they kind of let him go in and riff, and they animated to that. I'm not saying they did the same thing here, but it's definitely John Candy doing those moments in distress that he does so well. Like when you watch movies like The Great Outdoors, or you watch movies like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, when he gets frustrated did I say frustrated?
You did.
When he gets flustered or frustrated, you know, that panicky thing that he does is so typical John Candy. And so they let him have that moment to shine. It's almost like this was a scene just to say, we got John Candy.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, and Wendy Cooper in the chat made a good point. It's like Zoot and Castle Anthrax from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
That's true.
It's really weird.
That's true. That's a good pull, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Bad suit.
Well.
Wicked Zoot.
All right. What is the next? What now? What's next?
Oh, you know, I completely didn't write that down, did I?
No, and I know it's something. Right. I know it's got to be something really good.
It is. I want to say it's Beauty and the Beast.
That's what I was thinking it was.
Yeah. I'm going to it. Sorry, folks. It's going to be Disney's 30th animated feature, which is Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, that's a special one.
I will tell you guys who we're going to have for that show. Are you ready, Steve?
Who are we going to have?
Mark Newbold from Jedi News.
Wow.
It's his favorite. Nice.
It has a very, very special place in my heart. I it is a sentimental favorite of mine, is Beauty and the Beast, and I don't mind telling you that. So, of course, you'll hear stories of me and my niece as we get to their stories I've told before and will gladly tell again, because that's what I do. I tell stories over and over again. Well, Teresa, final thoughts on Rescuers Down Under?
Makes me want to fly like an eagle.
I tell you, it's a movie that I hadn't seen in years, and I enjoyed it just as much as I did last time I saw it. And I think that's good. I think that, you know, we've seen movies that haven't quite held up, or that, you know, we have fond memories of, that we're kind of like, oh, I wish this would have stayed in the fond memory era. But this was not one of those. This is not one of those that I was surprised by or disappointed by. It was right where it needed to be, in that sweet spot. And the takeaway is, it's Steve Irwin's origin story.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Why don't you tell
people?
The
show's hashtag is Crikey.
Crikey. How do you spell that?
C-R-I-K-E-Y.
There you go. How can people get in touch with us, Teresa?
Send us an email to vaulttalk@gmail.com. You can go on Facebook and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/DisneyVaultTalk. We are on Twitter and Instagram, just Twitter, @DisneyVaultTalk. I am on Twitter and Instagram @IceColdPenguin. Steve is @SteveGlossen. And, of course, you have to follow @Goaliverse.
Indeed, follow @Goaliverse so you'll know when I make time zone errors and that sort of thing. Also, if you want to support the shows, this show and all the Gulliver shows, you can do so at patreon.com/geekoutloud. There are Amazon links you can purchase from if you just go to geekoutonline.com or geekoutpodcast.com. And guys, go to geekoutonline.com/shirts. Geekoutonline.com/shirts. We have 5 different designs right now for Gulliver shows. Among them are the Baby Mushroom shirt for Disney Vault Talk. You can get it in multiple cuts, colors. You can get a hoodie since it's cooling down right now. You can get a baseball type tee, girl cut, guy cut, however you want it cut, with all kinds of colors. The Baby Mushroom shirt on sale now. Geekoutonline.com/shirts. Head over there and catch it. We're also a proud part of the Shot Glass Digital Network. You can go to shotglassdigital.com for all kinds of great audio entertainment there. And we're proud to be a part of Shot Glass Digital. That wraps us up, man. What a good time we had, and I hope you had a good time as well. I'm looking forward to the next episode when we're talking Beauty and the Beast. Until then, I'm Steve.
And I'm Teresa. May all your days be magical.
and may all your wishes come true. See you next time, guys. Did Seal cover that for Space Jam?
I think so.
I do too.